You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict from London, Telegraph reporting. Ukrainian troops have started liberating Luhansk, the region's top official said on Wednesday, as Vladimir Putin for the first time publicly acknowledged military setbacks in the annexed territories. Footage shared online appeared to show Kyiv's forces raising a Ukrainian flag in Rakivka, a village just over the border from Kharkiv Oblast, the scene of a lightning counteroffensive that recaptured vast swaths of land. I'll stop there because this is more battlefield reporting of the advance of the Ukrainian forces in the north, Kharkiv Oblast, but we also have reports of advances in the south, Kherson Oblast. These are oblasts, provinces, territories, states that have been annexed by order of Vladimir Putin and by endorsement by the Russian Duma, now said to be Russian territory, with Ukrainian forces advancing into them. George, I welcome you and to comment on not just the particulars here, but in your most recent essay, you ask questions about what is Russia thinking. The clarity for Russia begins and ends with the first thought. You report that Moscow wanted strategic depth. After that, we don't know what they're thinking, George. When did you realize it was all going wrong for them? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, actually, when I saw their first deployment, three armored columns separated by 100 miles, needing to be resupplied with fuel and what have you, trying to converge on the center of gravity of the Ukrainians. There was no center of gravity. These Ukrainians were a highly dispersed force. The Russians were acting as if this was still the Cold War. This is the kind of position they would have taken in the Cold War. I didn't think they would attack from this. I thought they were bluffing an attack. And so my first wonderment of them was they actually deployed that way, thinking that they could have armor, which is under attack by javelins and what have you, survive.
And the Russian intelligence gathering, did it fail to recognize that Ukraine would mount what you'd have to say was a guerrilla defense at first using handheld weapons, the javelins? Did the Russians see that and say, we can punch through it?
The Russians did not think that the Ukrainians would compose a coherent force. He also made a huge mistake about the United States. And that was his fatal mistake. He could have overcome the Ukrainians. But he thought, I think, that the chaos in the United States, the people who were saying, you know, don't fight the Russians and so on, that all these things were going to block the Americans from acting, missing the point that the Americans have historically acted in the middle of political chaos very rigorously. So he could have beaten the Ukrainians. His big mistake was, and this is something the old KGB would not have made, he misread the Americans.
You make a special attention to the word confidence in your essay, that the Russians began the conflict overconfident. That reminds me of one of the criticisms of the Imperial Japanese after their early victories in Singapore and the Philippines and the bombing of Hawaii, that they had victory disease. Did the Russians have victory disease by the 2014 Little Green Men on Crimea? Did that give them false expectations?
I think what gave them false expectations was that they hadn't realized that 20 years had gone by with the Ukrainians independent, and this was not the Ukraine his daddy knew. And he was simply dismissing the Americans. In other words, it wasn't that he engaged in wishful thinking. He thought deeply and came to the wrong conclusions about what he was facing, and he didn't align his forces. He has a powerful military. He could have aligned his forces to be much more successful. He didn't. He took an easy way out. Wasn't a good one.
All right, let's measure the first couple of months now. The overconfidence, not taking into account that the Ukrainians were going to disperse and fight in small units, the lack of understanding of what the U.S. and NATO were capable of in resupplying, and then the misperception that the fragmentation, the political discourse in the U.S. would lead the U.S. and NATO not to act as one. All of those things were wrong. Okay, fine. You're right, George. People make mistakes. It's often said, quoted, misquoted, paraphrased, you have a plan, and when you meet the enemy, you need a new plan. You tear up the old plan. Planning's important, but you don't stick to it. All right, he could not stick to it. And what instead happened is the three armored columns disappeared, and the reorientation of the Russian forces were to the Donbass, along the Russian frontier with the Donbass, and that was going to be the new battle zone. Did he perceive that correctly, George? What mistakes were made there?
Well, it wasn't that simply that. He started going after cities. He occupied certain cities. And in war, occupying a city, that's the prize at the end. If you take a city, you have to feed them. You're fighting an enemy who knows the city back of his hand. Your people don't. After he took this, he retreated out of the cities. He decided he was going to take the Donbass. Reasonable. He had a lot of support in Donbass. It was a Russian region by and large, and he should have been able to do it. What he didn't grasp is the Ukrainians could be an offensive force. He had met them on the defensive, found them to be a tough force to deal with. But what he never imagined is that the Ukrainians, coupled with the American weapons, could be an offensive force that would drive his forces back. So there was no safe haven.
I puzzled, George, just reviewing my memory of reporting on the war as you have. There was a misperception on the U.S.-NATO side as well. In those early weeks, the amount of material and weaponry flowing now does not describe what was available in February, March, April, I think as late as May. I remember much attention to non-lethal aid, or we have to limit what we're giving because, and there was talk about a Cold War or a Third World War, or nuclear exchange, some kind of escalation. That also went away. So was the misperception on both sides? In other words, the U.S. misperceived Ukraine and Moscow misperceived Ukraine.
Well, Moscow misperceived it, but they started the war, so they had no business doing it. The United States underestimates wars, Europeans estimate wars when they start. The test of a nation's military is how it recovers from the first defeat. The recovery from Pearl Harbor was critical for the Americans, and we did that fairly well. In Vietnam, we had defeats and didn't recover them extremely well. But in this particular case, we didn't realize he was really coming in. When we realized he was really coming in, we began the arms shipments. And then when we realized he came in, we realized this was an enormous existential danger to us. The danger was that if Ukraine fell, then the Russian forces would be on the border of NATO again. We'd be back in the Cold War. And the United States let loose every weapon it could get over there.
What's going on now, George, and all we have is battlefield reports, is that the Russians are on the defensive and falling back here and there, pulling out of villages, pulling back because they're thinly dispersed north and south. And you note that Ukraine is now able to name the battlefield. It picket spots, go after vulnerable parts or wherever the Russians are retreating. Do the Russians have a counter for this? I mean, they've made the big mistake with three armor columns. The second big mistake with thinking that the U.S. wasn't going to aid and that Donbass would be straightforward. Now they're making the third mistake. How? What are they doing wrong now, George?
They seem unable to innovate. They wind up with an attack in a place they didn't expect. And the officers don't seem to be able to move the forces around and concentrate them against the attack. In other words, they're letting them bypass them, then they get cut off. And it's very, it's interesting. The Russian soldier is a hardy and brave soldier. Their problems have always been their officer corps and the fact they have no sergeants. Unlike the United States and China, as sergeants who will lead the troops and lead them hard, the Russians use junior officers for that function, for training and so on. And as a result, you've got some very young people leading the tactical battle, and they're just not moving fast enough, and the senior officers simply aren't playing chess.
Because right now, the question again comes of confidence. If an army loses confidence in its leadership, is the army defeated? Can it reorganize itself without leadership, or is that the critical element?
Well, we had a military crisis of confidence after Pearl Harbor. No question about it. We also had an officer corps that had modeled this war game, War Plan Orange, many times, and stepped in and acted as if they knew what they were doing. I don't know what goes on in the battlefield between the junior with junior officers and the senior officers, but I wonder if anybody there gamed out this war as if it would begin with a major reversal. So if they didn't plan on what we would do in the event of a reversal, it's hard to improvise. And I think that's what the problem is.
You quote Gerd von Rundstedt, "Make peace, you fools." I remember a moment, I think it's in July of 44, when Rommel, who was commanding the resistance in Normandy, was meeting with other commanders, the Panzer SS commanders. They were meeting, and this is right prior to Rommel's badly being wounded by an airstrike. And the conversation turned on, we have reason to believe that we can hold off the American flow if we fall back, but we've been given orders that we have to, can't give up one inch of ground. And they started discussing what else they could do. And one of the things that came up was make peace, make a deal with the Americans. And you know, from 44 on until 45, till right the end, there were German officers always thinking, well, maybe we can make a separate peace and turn them against the Soviets, the real enemy. It was a fantasy, but they had it. Is that going on in the Russian army now, George? Are they talking about making peace with the Americans?
I have absolutely no doubt that both sides are considering terms of some peace agreement. One of the things we've assumed all along is this would end in some sort of peace agreement dividing Ukraine in some way. I think that thinking is still going on. But at a certain point, if the Ukrainians continue to have these successes and the Americans keep backing them, they're going to be thinking about defeating the enemy army. The problem with a retreat, always remember, is it can turn into a rout. Yeah. Very disciplined forces can retreat. Less disciplined forces, it can begin to end.
I've concentrated on the battlefield because those are the reports we've had, and you write analysis of the battlefield. But there's a battle going on that's much larger about energy. We have various media reports in these last hours about OPEC cutting its production 2 million barrels, and in doing this in some coordination with Russia, seeking higher prices. We have news out of the EU about a so-called watered-down price cap for oil. We have disputes about subsidizing electricity for, say, Germany or other parts of the EU. In other words, there's energy is part of the conflict. We also have news of a drone activity somewhere near the Danish fields. Unknown source. We have not solved the Nord Stream 1 and 2 attacks. And I believe in these last hours, the Kremlin has claimed Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in all of Europe, which is offline to my knowledge now, is Russian territory, Russian plunder that they now possess. This is the energy battlefield. Is Russia misperceiving the energy battlefield as well? Because Europe is not on its knees. It's not surrendering. It's arguing, but it's not surrendering. And the energy that's available in the future, it doesn't need Russia if the planning continues in this fashion. Did Russia also misunderstand the energy weapon?
I think it understands that Europe is hungry for energy. I think what it doesn't understand is that Europe no longer is playing its fighting role in this war, in the sense that at the beginning of the war, getting the Germans on board and getting NATO on board is critical. But because Germany is given relatively little, they've been not even the top 10 providers of equipment, the American concern about their being in the war, out of the war, is somewhat less. The American concern about oil prices surging in the United States is not trivial, but the cost of losing the war at this point in the United States would be high, and we'll just admit it. It reminds me of 73 in the Arab-Israeli war, when we had the energy, the oil embargo, and drove prices up and drove us into a great recession at the time. This has been done before. Remember that the Arabs, for example, have suffered a great deal at low energy prices. Right. They need more. And this is a wonderful opportunity for them.
George Friedman, the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site. When we come back, a note about naming when you are an editor or an author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at Coda.com/trip planner.